Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Warning. The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
So, as always, that is your little ears warning. And remember, you can catch this chat on our podcast after the show. Now, when it comes to romance, do you have a type? That's the question I asked just before the news. Do you keep making the same mistakes, ending up back at square one? Well, never fear, because our resident sex and relationship therapist, Rachel Cook, is on the line with the answers to all of your problems. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Lottie. I hope I have all the answers. Let's see what we've got.
Well, generally, I think it would be safe to say, Rachel, you come fairly close.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm glad to hear.
Well, I think so. The main question, let's just get it out there. What does it actually mean to have a type? Because people say it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, most basically, you know, your type is the pattern in your dating behavior. It might be that you keep dating hot messes, or maybe it's married people. You know, it might be that they have similar religious or racial backgrounds or job or interests. Or for many people, it's more to do with the dynamic between you, that maybe you end up being kind of like their mom, or maybe it's that you end up being in your partner's shadow. So, you know, there's loads of different types out there, from the brooding loner, sort of quirky artist, social butterfly, the jock. You know, we've got tons of these, the F boy. You know, there's all sorts of types out there. And, you know, basically most people will say that they have, you know, kind of one or more types that they are particularly drawn to, which may be very successful or spectacularly unsuccessful. But that's what a type is.
So whether it's successful or unsuccessful, do people kind of, like, would they tend to stay with the same type throughout their life? Or as you grow older, does your type change? Or as you learn a lesson, maybe you've had a bad relationship?
Yeah, so that, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head there at the last one. So, you know, first of all, you know, we're very adaptable and, you know, we vary a lot throughout our lives in general, some people more than others, especially those of us who seemingly from research are more extroverted. We tend to kind of change more. But it's, you know, it's really likely that the person you are at 35 is not the same person that you were at 18. So generally, as we learn to understand ourselves better, we'll kind of seek people who maybe fit in better with our lives rather than someone who, you know, in the beginning we might base it more on look, or someone who gives us massive butterflies, which is often a sign that, you know, maybe that they're unavailable to us, and that's what's getting us going potentially. But yeah, it can often be breakups, you know, that lead people to really reflect, sometimes to reflect and interpret things in ways that aren't very helpful, and maybe they continue going for people who are not very available or compatible with them. But often, you know, a breakup, especially if it's, you know, it doesn't have to be a longer term relationship, but especially if you have maybe spent a decent period of time with that person and really gotten to know each other, it's very likely that you'll take that time afterwards, potentially with a therapist or talking through it with your friends or journaling, to just have a bit more of an idea of, you know, that there might be better people, more suitable people out there that have different sets of traits and different dynamics with them. So yes, it's reasonably likely that that will change over the course of your life.
And like, how early in life do we develop a type? I mean, I think I remember as far back as early teens, people in your friends group saying, oh, she keeps going out with the same type of guy, or she goes for the bad boy, she won't stop going for the bad boy. Like, how do we, at that age, so early in life, have already got a type?
Yeah, so there's quite a few different perspectives on this. There's no sort of settled, you know, kind of psychology explanation for why this happens. But different perspectives include, you know, often when we're younger, we base it more on looks and status. So the bad boy represents sort of someone who's kind of hard to get, and, you know, that you're kind of going to win social kudos for being able to get him, let's say. And then we have kind of evolutionary psychology, which says that we choose based on DNA, you know, basically pheromones and compatible immune systems to have the best chance of healthy children. Now, again, a lot of people would discredit that and say that that's not something that's, you know, that we either can totally prove, nor that it's something that's as applicable these days, because modern dating life has changed so much and people are, you know, less people are living, you know, together forever monogamously, less people are having children, less people are cohabiting and getting married. But definitely evolutionary psychology says that a big biological player is something called the major histocompatibility complex, or MHC.
What?
And so that's basically part of our genetic code that helps our immune system recognize, it helps us sense like a potential mate scent and actively seek out someone whose immune system is as different to ours as possible, which is supposedly meant to increase the likelihood of having healthy offspring with very robust immune systems. So basically they smell good to you because of these innate biological responses.
When I was in the club and I first saw Fabio, that I was actually kind of going, his immune system smells good.
That's what evolutionary psychology says. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't quite match up when you're thinking about Fabio in the club, but but that is what it says. And then to throw another spanner in the works, you know, I would say the one that seems most plausible is that the relationships that you have with your parents or primary caregivers will shape the kind of love you want to receive as a teenager and adult.
This is one that I think as you're growing up, you find very hard to wrap your head around. That you probably represent to your other half what their mother was like to them, or, you know, don't know. It's a hard one to sit with people, I think.
It's a hard one to swallow, yes. It's often said that women go for men like their dads and guys go for women like their mas, you know, and that also doesn't take into account, you know, the variance in, you know, the variety of sexualities that people have. And yeah, I would say it's not so much necessarily. Some people will find that they actually go for partners who look very similar to their parents.
That's
or
creepy.
Parents. Yeah. And then for other people, it's a lot more to do. And I would say it's much more common for it to be to do with the dynamic. So, you know, for instance, if you had a parent that was quite avoidant in terms of physical affection, you might go for someone who is also quite avoidant because, you know, and there's different reasons behind this. Some people will say we have something called a repetition compulsion, which is where we are compelled to repeat the patterns of childhood in order to try and heal those wounds and be able to, you know, live as a kind of whole healthy person as an adult. Now, another perspective on that is simply that we go for what's familiar. It's not necessarily that we're trying to heal that on some unconscious level. It's simply that what's familiar to us, although it might have been painful, is what we know, and that on some level feels safe. So it might also mean that we go for the exact opposite. So if you grew up in a household that was, that there was very little physical affection, or people didn't really talk about love, maybe it was more about acts of service and stuff like that, but there wasn't a lot of words of affirmation, maybe you will end up going for people who are extremely physically affectionate and do a lot of that because it was so painfully missing in your childhood. So again, there's just such variation that it's very difficult to pinpoint this stuff. So I think it's much easier to, rather than trying to look at trends, although the research can be useful for sure, but rather than trying to, you know, explain it away in one way, just try to get to know yourself better, you know, journal about this stuff, reflect on this stuff to be able to kind of recognize, like, is the person who I'm attracted to now different to when I was 15 or 20? You know, what sorts of things do I tend to feel and associate with attraction? Is it butterflies? Is it when someone is unavailable to me that really gets me going? Is it when someone is kind of clingy and really kind of all over me that's the only time that I feel safe? Those sorts of things can be helpful.
I mean, say you're coming up against problems in your relationship.
Yeah.
How do you know, I just keep going for the same type, or when do you have to kind of look inwards and say, well, the problem's actually me?
Well, I would say, you know, and this is a difficult one also, because I often have people coming to me, you know, some of the research has shown that although we do seem to go for people who are reasonably similar to us in terms of our kind of personality type, background, sort of socioeconomic status, that may not be so much because of that we want people who are like us, so much as that's the dating pool that's available to us. You know, a lot of us will have met a partner while we were at, you know, could be school, it could be uni, it could be work, and that there tends to be similar enough groupings of sort of people's background, you know, of their identity. So that's not to say that you will, you know, that you're all going to be introverted or extroverted or whatever. It's more to do with these details of background, of kind of like, you know, how much education you've had. You may, it could be, yeah, you know, it's going to be a lot to do with geography and stuff like that, which might also make a difference to, you know, sort of where your partner's from. And that sort of thing, which is also going to influence their cultural background. So I would say, you know, sometimes it's simply that that's the pool of people available to you. And so you may not be the problem as such. But if you find that you are, you know, if your friends and family are telling you, you know, you seem to be dating people who are very similar, who either aren't that into you or don't treat you very well, or you don't seem to be at all interested by them, stimulated by them, you know, it's like, okay, well, I am the common denominator here. So how might you look at that? You know, we're all wounded in one way or another during our upbringing. And we develop these kind of defensive and coping mechanisms to manage, which happens unconsciously. But it, I think we tend to fall in love or be attracted to partners who were wounded in relatively similar sort of developmental stages as us. So that's, a you know, so the one person might really need space and to withdraw from stress situations. Might mean that we are attracted to someone who needs much more closeness and wants to talk through that. So we might have been developmentally wounded in similar ways, but it might mean that we're attracted to people who respond to that maybe in the opposite way. So again, just try to look at the patterns of whether, you know, what's coming out in you, in your behavior with that other person, and the sort of place or dynamic you take in the relationship. Or if you're just finding like, oh my God, it's just the same person over and over again, and it's not working for me.
Well, what about sex? When it comes to sex, do you think it's going to be, I would imagine it's much more impassioned and on the same level if you've got somebody who you would consider to be your type than trying to have a sexual relationship with somebody who's just not on your level?
That one seems to vary massively. For some reason, people assume that if you're more compatible with someone, that that's going to make you more likely to have great sex with them. Now, the thing is, you know, what makes good sex is generally good communication, you know, basically.
Yes.
Decent self-awareness, sensitivity to the other person, and great communication. So sometimes you just have amazing sexual chemistry with someone, but there seems to be almost no correlation with whether that relates to your compatibility, which can be very confusing, because obviously, you know, for a lot of us, I think especially those of us who have been conditioned as women, you know, we've been told through the media, through Hollywood, through Disney movies all along. I mean, it's people of all genders who've been told this, but I think particularly for women, that messaging has been that, like, you know, if you feel a really strong romantic pull towards someone and kind of sexual attraction, that those things will come together and that means it's a good partner for you. And actually, that doesn't seem to hold up at all.
Rachel, we've got a question in for you, if that's okay.
Go for it.
So, guys, I've noticed that I always seem to end up with the confident, popular, funny guy, but they always end up having a lot of confidence issues and inner demons. And I feel I nearly end up being their therapist in the relationship. This has been 3 out of my past 4 relationships. Have you any thoughts on this?
I have loads of thoughts on that. Okay, so one, I would say it depends on the age of this person, because again, we've talked about this a lot before. You know, society is such, in certainly the Western world, where, you know, where we are, that men tend to be socialized to be developmentally much further behind women. So it is very common that I hear women who are dating men telling me that they feel like they're their partner's mother, you know, that they're their therapist, that they're for all sorts of reasons. Now, it's not to say that that's every single man. And, you know, there are certainly women out there who, you know, are adults and are not acting like adults. But there is much more of a trend of, you know, women sort of having their shit together and men not in the same way. And so I would say partially that could be a societal thing for this person. And again, if this person is, say, 20 or 25, you know, again, people are just going to be young and quite immature. So they just haven't developed yet. But if this person is sort of in their 40s or 50s, it might be that they are, there's an interaction between societal aspects and what this person is drawn to. So maybe it's that, you know, it seems that this person is saying that they're drawn to these people, you know, in the beginning because they're confident, but also that might not mean that, you know, that that actually is how that person is.
So can they actively then change their type? Is that possible?
Yes, it is active. It is absolutely possible to change your type. I would say going for values and qualities in someone rather than going purely on looks. Of course, it's important if it is important to you. For some people, it's not important for them to be sexually attracted to their partner, either because they don't really, they're not particularly into sex, or it's just not a particularly important feature for them. But for most people, I would say, you know, of course, it is important to feel attracted to your partner. But also that's going to ebb and flow. You know, there's going to be times, you know, ideally choose someone who you definitely feel some attraction towards, but know that in almost all relationships that is going to sometimes not be there as much as others, and that's just the way it is. But I would say going for values and qualities, you know, if you know you really want to date someone who's creative because you feel it really complements your personality, you know, that's a kind of value-oriented specification, not, you know, something like a preference in eye color or something like that, which is just not going to do much for you. But I would say, you know, if you want to change your type, you have to ask yourself questions like, how much of what you look for in a partner is about the sort of person that you imagine yourself being with, you know, that you fantasize about as being an ideal partner, rather than them having qualities that are actually compatible with your own, because the latter is going to be more important than the fantasy idea of a person, because, you know, no one is going to live up to that fantasy. And then asking yourself things like, how much of what you've seen as problematic behavior in your exes, your ex-partners, how much of that is likely to be them being similar people, and how much of that is actually co-created through how you are relating to them, you know, the dynamic between you. Because as this person said that they are, you know, they end up being their partner's therapist. It's like you have a role in that. You are choosing to listen to their problems, take all that time, you know, possibly you're kind of giving them suggestions and advice. You know, you don't have to do that. You can point out that that's not your job in a, you know, kind of gentle, polite way, ideally, and then not do that. Ask them to go see a therapist or to talk about that stuff with their friends. You don't have to be your partner's therapist.
Rachel Cook, psychotherapist and mental health consultant. As always, it's an absolute pleasure. You can follow Rachel on Instagram. Her handle is @RachelJaneCook, and she'll be back next week. So if you've got a question that you want us to ask Rachel, all you've got to do is get in touch with the team. They're available 24/7. So you can email them at 2 a.m. You can email them whenever you want to. We'll be back right after this.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.